and welcome back to The Campfire, our hopefully short, well, not if you consider the last one, deep dives into a pressing modern political issue. The Civic Flame is our main podcast, which takes a much more detailed look at the U.S. Constitution, so if you want to check that out, head over there. This week, we are returning to our cybersecurity threats deep dive and looking at rage farming. This is a follow-up to our bot farm episode, which you can check out if you missed it. But this week, we're going to look at why so many people around the world appear to be so addicted to anger and how technology and capitalism might be driving that. Well, as you learned from talking about bot farms last time, there's a lot of the internet that is, as it turns out, fake people, software programs, AI, and machines pretending to be us. Why? Because we're cool. No, really. Why is, in order to drive up content and get it to your newsfeed, bot farms add likes, shares, followers, and sometimes even comments to your online content. Yet despite the amount of money and infrastructure, including AI and other bots that go into creating these bot farms, for the moment, they still need your eyeballs on their content. And it turns out that to make something really popular online and get all those glassy, mindless little eyeballs on the content, you want to add some high emotional tones. And rage, despite all of its actual harmful effects on our brains, bodies, and cultures, is a great way to get people engaging with content. Bot farms that do this on purpose call it rage farming. I call it rage harvesting, since that's what they sow and that's what we reap. But social media is just a mirror of society, you may be thinking. Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, they don't create emotions, they just mirror them. They have a product that people want to use. It's not their fault what people do with it. Yeah, where did you hear that? From social media executives who want to promise you, the consumer, that they're not doing any of this on purpose. They aren't driving up negative content and misinformation online for profit, they pinky swear. They're just holding up a mirror to today's society. If we don't like what we see, well, that's because other people are terrible and not the fault of corporate greed run amok. How could they have known this would happen? They totally don't have the data on this, for realsies. Well, that's what they say, isn't it? And it's a nice way to make us hate each other for being so terrible, instead of admitting that what they are doing is driving up anger and conspiracy theories online that divide us and keep them in power. Because the longer we search down internet rabbit holes or argue with trolls and bots, the more money they get. To paraphrase the late, great George Carlin, the rich people keep us fighting with each other so they can sneak out the back and run off with all the fucking money. Then, these billionaires, and as a reminder, private individuals who are billionaires own TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Google owns YouTube. So these guys turn around and they sell access to their platforms and white glove services to help using their algorithms to drive traffic, content, money, and eyeballs to corporations, politicians, and even whole countries. They sell their product, us and our data, and their algorithms as something which can modify, predict, and even encourage behavior, from shopping to voting to participating in riots. They know they're doing it for profit, and they know what they're doing. How do they get away with it? Well, one thing is that a lot of these platforms have made themselves indispensable to politicians who want to be elected. If you want to be elected, going after big tech isn't the way to go because they can manipulate online content against you. But also because it's super complicated and it's done almost completely in darkness. This stuff can be really hard to understand in isolation, which is why most of us have no idea what's going on. And I'm including myself in this because I only know a fraction of the whole picture. As much as you think I've got my tinfoil hat on, I don't because it's downstairs. The truth is probably so much worse. There's a documentary I'll recommend next week. It's the episode Social Media Boom from the CNN documentary 2010s and the several episodes from the podcast Behind the Bastard. These will help you lay some groundwork and context for all of this information. I like to think of documentaries as intellectual infrastructure. Or you can basically just go watch Captain America and the Winter Soldier, because we've got to give it to the Russo brothers. They looked at the Patriot Act and post 9/11 America and started talking about a future where we can't tell the difference between freedom and fear, and that the digital book of the 20th century would be used to suppress dissidents and punish nonconformists, and showed the way people in power sow chaos, so we'll throw our freedom at them in exchange for a false sense of security. I mean, they pretty much nailed it. What they didn't anticipate was the use of AI and bot farms, although there's some argument that maybe they did, and that these use rage deliberately, and how easily our brains would get wired to need that rage. Or, as we'd say if it was drugs or alcohol or food, our brains got addicted to the anger. And this is a worldwide mental health problem. Information showed Facebook how to help promote a genocide in Myanmar because Mark Zuckerberg sold them his pet project, internet.org, which was basically internet light. People who never had desktops and had no familiarity with the internet were given phones preloaded with a certain selection of websites and apps, including Facebook. But a series of issues happened. The first was that the Burmese language does not translate well for bots, so it was hard to understand what content was going on. Evidence also suggests that the person Facebook put in charge of this was on the side of the people committing the genocide. And because the internet only came with some websites, and none of them were news channels, when fake news traveled through Facebook, nobody could actually fact check it beyond seeing what other people on Facebook had also posted. And I should insert a trigger warning. For the next 15 to 30 seconds, I'm going to talk about some of the details of the genocide in Myanmar. So if you want to hear about this, absolutely listen. If you don't, you can go ahead and click that 15-second skip ahead button two or three times and then check back in with me once we're done. But so what happens in this genocide? This leads to mass extermination camps by the military, including the mass slaughter of civilians, the at large scale use of sexual violence, including in public. Girls and women were gang raped in public places, in front of their families and communities, and so much more went on. And as it was happening, the US State Department was begging Facebook to do something about it. And as Sarah Wynne Williams writes in her tell-all, Careless People, she and a small handful of other workers at Facebook were begging their bosses to take it seriously. In the less physical violence news, but more Islamophobia actually, as the genocide in Myanmar was targeted towards Muslims, Welsh journalist with the BBC, Carol Cadwalder, and I apologize so much if I pronounce your name wrong, but Welsh has a lot of consonants that are really close to each other that confuse my brain. She talks about, on two TED Talks, about how misinformation, including Islamophobia, to the level that she calls a digital hate crime, shaped the Brexit vote. She gives a 17-minute TED Talk, which I put up on our YouTube page, The Civic Flame, and she exposes the kind of deliberate false information that was spread during Brexit and how it shaped the results of Brexit elections. Check out her TED Talks, Facebook's Role in Brexit, and This is What a Digital Coup Looks Like. Again, both of those are up on our YouTube page. Filipina Nobel laureate Maria Ressa does an interview on Boston Public Radio called America Needs to Wake Up. I put this one up on YouTube as well. And if you want to see how far the digital control surveillance state can go, check out John Oliver's Last Week Tonight episode on the Uyghurs. Islamophobia was not supposed to be a secondary theme of this episode, but apparently it is. And you can go look up AI and automated weapons and warfare. That'll suck the joy right out of you. Hey, I'm called Dr. Fun Sponge for a reason. The deliberate misinformation and rage harming is all perfectly horrifying in the past and doomsaying for the future. But how does it affect your day-to-day? Look around at your community. Does everybody hate each other and they can't figure out why? Did you ever consider that there is a reason, some kind of reason, any kind of reason, behind this deliberate construction of making neighbors hate neighbors? So much of how I learned about the world around me as a young kid was from the old people in my neighborhood. People who didn't look like me, people who didn't think like me, people who were different religions, different political persuasions, different ages, different races. There was a sense of community and history to at least some extent. It wasn't, you know, Mayberry, but we had the ability to talk to other people who had different points of view without being so polarized and so snapped to anger that I was able to learn a lot about the world around me that way. You know, the sense of not just community, but of history and people talking about, oh, well, when I was your age, there was this major political event, or when I was your age, I couldn't have a job because my husband said no, right? All of these kinds of generational information that get passed on kind of don't anymore because we used to talk to each other. But even in the early days on the internet, there was the ability to make some level of meaningful social connection. I tend to call it anti-social media now because of how deeply toxic it has become. And that's for a lot of us. Whether you're one of those toxic positivity people who, you know, get upset that book talk got political, or whether you're doom scrolling and having a panic attack under the weight of the world's problems, there's just a lot of that that is constructed to make you engage on fear, on anger, and so forth. The thing is, just as these companies know it's happening, they also know how to stop it. It does not have to be this way. Just before the 2020 election, Facebook turned off its worst offending algorithms, aka user maximizing features, and they decided to prioritize legitimate news content and get rid of conspiracy theories. But when they realized shortly after the 2020 election, people were spending less time on the platform, they turned them back on, just in time for the Stop the Steal conspiracy theories growing online. Facebook promoted angry conspiracies for profit, and it resulted in an actual insurrection. And with the help of the president and his advisors, the biggest threat to US democracy we've ever had. Because it turns out, keeping people angry and separated so they can take all the money isn't enough. As billionaire Peter Thiel, who owns the surveillance state Palantir, was caught on video saying, he's worried that the tax codes are making it hard for him to hide his billions and not pay taxes on them. So he's been pushing fear and anxiety in terms of religion and the actual Antichrist and apocalypse. He's funded the folks who keep pushing this Armageddon narrative because he knows people will, in a hair on fire panic, run around rather than stepping back and rationally thinking, hey, is this clown trying to use my faith to steal my cash? They wouldn't spend billions of dollars on it if it didn't work. Now that I've given you the scoop, feel free to yank that wizard right out from behind his curtain. Be rigorous in your news sources and don't feed the trolls or bots. When something online seems designed to send you into a rage spiral, ask why. If you find yourself in a bad habit with some of this content, find ways to replace rage habits or other habits and wean yourself off of the bad stuff. I recommend starting by adding positive content to your algorithms, or if you have the ability on your phone, limit the amount of screen time you can spend on each app. That's something I do, just as a mental check to remind myself. Do whatever you can to make sure that when these organizations harvest rage, that they will reap nothing from you. Next week, I'll be back with some book and other recommendations for you to help you go more in depth if you want. Until then, stay paranoid. And thanks for joining the good fight. This Campfire edition of The Civic Flame is brought to you by Dr. Fun Sponge Media in association with creator Amber Veo and sound producer Matthew Munyon. As always, thank you for listening.